Hi listener, welcome to Good Copy, Bad Copy, the B2B copywriting podcast. I'm David Maguire, Creative Director at Radix Communications, and I'm sitting opposite our lead copywriter and CEO, Fiona Campbell-Howes.
Hello.
Hi Fiona, how are you doing today?
I am all right, thank you. My brain is quite full.
Oh.
It's quite apposite that we're doing a podcast about writing for engineers because I've been working on some quite technical content today, and so my brain is full of GNSS testing equipment and methods.
Oh my goodness. I will talk about more of that later. This episode, we'll be chatting about how you do write marketing content that's aimed at engineers. And we'll be hearing from Lasse Lund of Danfoss about what it's like doing just that at a multinational, multilingual company. He has a really interesting story about how he got to be where he is today. As always, we want you to get in touch and to tell us what you think. So send us an email or a voice memo to podcast@radix-communications.com or tweet us at radixcom. That's RADIXCOM. Now, actually, a few people were moved to do just that by January's episode on the gender say gap in B2B. So that's where we're going to start this month.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, that episode really did seem to strike a chord with people. And I guess we were looking at two things in that episode. So we had Claire Mason, the CEO of Man Bites Dog, mm-hmm. a thought leadership consultancy, talking about the gender say gap, which is the kind of underrepresentation of women's voices in the media and in sort of business coverage and indeed in B2B marketing content. So, you know, while I think she was saying women now outnumber men in high status professions, those voices aren't being heard proportionately. And so she was giving some great advice on how we as B2B marketers, B2B copywriters can help overcome that. And then at the same time, we were also looking at, you know, why are there so few, or why do there seem to be so few women B2B tech copywriters? You know, we looked at both things on the episode, and we had a brilliant response to it. So, yeah. You know, on social media and people emailing us. And
I don't think we've ever had a response like it. It's clearly something that people really care about. And yeah. Obviously, we're really grateful to everyone that got in touch by email or took the time to comment on social or to share that edition of the podcast. I think it's one of the most popular ones we've ever done, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I would like to kind of share one email that we had.
Sure.
And this is from Bisma Hashmi, mm-hmm. Who is, I mean, she is a lady tech copywriter, as Katie had in the blog post, I think. But she's got a really cool background. So she's a qualified electrical engineer. So she's a bona fide techie turned copywriter. And she's saying she's never felt that her gender was a barrier to breaking into technology copywriting. In fact, she says, you know, often clients like to use her and prefer to use her because she has that technical background. But she was, she's saying, you know, this is a topic that really interests her, and she has some tips for encouraging more women into tech copywriting and into the technology industry as a whole. So she says, yes, you know, try to eliminate the gender say gap, especially ensuring that media representatives and us copywriters stay above gender-specific terms, which is something we were talking about in the podcast.
Sure.
And then she was saying, educate parents about, you know, these kind of careers, you know, careers in tech copywriting, so that, you know, they can encourage their children to go into those careers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that's a really good point. And I would go further and say also, you know, as copywriters, what we can do is go into schools and
yeah.
talk about tech copywriting as a career. I think we've done that a couple of times here, so that, you know, equally girls and boys can see that, you know, this is a viable career option for them.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, because people think, you know, like they have to make a choice, like between, you know, technical and science and creative and writing. And for people that are good at both things, this
yeah.
is a, you know, this is a, it's a great niche. You can kind of look at it from both angles.
Absolutely. And if, you know, and if they see that there are women with these careers in tech and there are women in tech copywriting, it can be more encouraging. Mm-hmm. And then she was saying, and I, you know, I completely agree with this as well, but this is like making gender neutral toys and clothes.
Yeah.
So it's like the whole thing about, you know, don't make everything for girls pink, don't make everything for boys blue. So, so really good thoughts there from Bisma. Thanks very much for taking the time to email us. That's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks also to Barry Whittle of Aptio. Barry got in touch to say, I really enjoyed the gender say gap episode and it gave me pause, which surely is the point of any podcast. I couldn't agree more, Barry, and we're delighted that the issue made you think.
Absolutely. So thanks very much again to Claire for joining us and for being such a great interviewee, and to the people who took part in the discussion online. So I think we saw Roberta de Lima, Caroline Robinson, Daryl Newman, Anna McLaughlin, and quite a few others as well. So thanks to you guys as well.
Thanks to all of you. Right.
I said thanks to you guys, and that's like using gendered language for
No.
I've just recently had this discussion with a client, you know, can we use guys?
I think guys is gender neutral these days.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I think the jury may still be out on that. So
I don't know.
You go. People, let us know what you think.
What do you think of guys? I'm with Catelyn Moran on this, actually. Yeah. You know, that everyone is just the guys now.
I use it as well, but you know, some people aren't so sure, so.
Well, apart from that, that one issue, that's the patriarchy smashed. So
absolutely.
Let's get on with something else, like talking about writing copy for engineers. Late last year, I caught up with Lasse Lund of Danish manufacturing giant Danfoss, and he told me about his experiences writing technical copy in a multinational, multilingual environment. I started, though, by asking him to tell us a bit about the company.
So Danfoss is a company that was started here in Denmark, where I work. It's located in a city called Nobo, which is in the southern part of the main peninsula of Denmark. But they create all kinds of components and things that go inside chillers, which are the air conditioning units that you'll find on major commercial buildings. And they make high pressure pumps, and they have a power solutions division that makes things for tractors. So, but usually it's a lot of the small components that you'll find in a lot of machinery and applications all around the world.
Wow, that's amazing. Sounds like that's a really sort of big global and technical thing. I've got to ask. You don't sound incredibly Danish. How is that?
No. Yeah, so I have a very Danish name, and I was born here in Denmark, but my mom's an American, so she had come here to Denmark to study and then ended up meeting my Danish father. And so I was born here, but then my parents divorced when I was just 1 year old. And so my mom wanted to move back to the U.S., so she took my sister and I back to Wisconsin, and so that's where I was raised, in the middle of the country. And eventually I moved out to Washington State, which is on the West Coast. So just kind of the Seattle area. And that's where I got my start in my career. That's where I met my wife. That's where I had my two kids. And so I ended up being a dual citizen. So I have my Danish passport and I have my American passport. I had never really spent a lot of time in Denmark. I had visited at certain points growing up. And so after I got my Danish passport in my mid-20s, my wife and I just started talking about what would it be like if we moved to Denmark? You know, maybe we should see if that's possible. And so we decided 3 years ago that we wanted to move here. And so I got a job here, and we sold about 90% of the stuff that we owned in the U.S. and came here with literally like seven suitcases and ourselves and restarted our life here in Denmark.
Oh my God! So you've traveled what, 6,000 miles or something?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know exactly how many it is, but yeah, thousands of miles.
God,
and right here to Copenhagen,
and to a place where you know America's all really you've ever known, and all your kids have.
Yeah.
How was that kind of, you know, culturally and language wise
and
all of that stuff?
Honestly, it was amazing. I mean, this experience has been one of the best things I've ever done in my life. And so we came here and, you know, we immediately were trying to immerse ourselves in the culture. And so I started taking Danish classes. We explored the country together as a family. I mean, there's so many castles and unique experiences to be had here.
So, wow, that sounds like the most amazing and brave thing. And it sounds like it's really paid off for you. And I mean, I'm going to take a wild guess that yeah, being there as a copywriter and as a native English speaker, In a country where there are, you know, Danish-based company and, yep. and loads of different languages, that must make you kind of a go-to guy when it comes to Danfoss making stuff sound good in English.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the value that I bring to the company for sure. Because I mean, a lot of Danes, I mean, almost all Danes speak English on some level, and especially the ones that work in a company like Danfoss. I mean, they speak it on a near native level. They're very, very good at it. And the company language in Danfoss is American English because it's such a global company. There's 27,000 employees worldwide. We cover the globe in our offices and we operate in almost every region. And so, yeah, American English is the uniting language for the company. And so then, yeah, having a guy like me on board just makes sure that, I mean, I'm very externally focused, right? We have internal communications teams. We have people embedded in our regions and stuff. But for Danfoss Cooling, which is the division that I'm part of, I sit on the global marketing team, and I am, yeah, the go-to guy when it comes to, is this grammatical nuance okay? Can we use this expression in English and all of that kind of stuff? So I'm the reference point.
So you spent sort of a lot of your time kind of editing copy that was written by non-native English
yeah.
speakers. Any kind of tips on how to do that well? I mean, especially in a kind of a technical a technical area.
Yeah. So a couple thoughts there. First, I mean, yeah, I would say the majority of the kind of writing that I do, or I should probably say editing instead. I function more as an editor than I do as, you know, writing stuff from the ground up, just because Danfoss has so many products. I mean, we have literally hundreds, if not thousands of products just in Danfoss Cooling where I work. And so all the product managers and the different regions, you know, they're writing case studies, they're writing product brochures, they're launching web pages and writing emails. I mean, all the different kinds of marketing communication. And so they will often just swing it by me, or, you know, pass it through my inbox rather, and just ask me to do a review of it. And so for the most part, I mean, again, I work with people that are very, very good at English, and they actually really keep me on my toes sometimes, because I'll use, like, you know, when you're a copywriter, you know the rules pretty well. And so then you have some flexibility to break the rules a little bit, you know, when you're trying to create something interesting and unique.
If the clients let you get away with it, yeah.
If the clients let you get away with it, right? And so, I have to often justify a lot of my decisions with them, where I will use an idiom, or I'll do a twist on a grammatical rule, and they'll come back and they'll be like, well, why'd you do that? You can't do that. And I'm like, well, okay, but when you're speaking, you know, in the American English mindset, yes, it works. And I mean, so I guess the tip I would say is just always be ready to give a reason for the choice you've made. And I think that's a rule that applies to copy across the board, but it doesn't come as instinct all the time when you're talking with a non-native speaker. So you just have to really get ready to dive in and say, well, I chose this word, carries this emotion for this reason, or here's the grammatical rule. And so, but I mean, 95% of the time they're open and willing to that. And I very rarely get any kind of pushback.
Sure. I mean, that's great. That's great practice for anybody. I mean, it really makes you kind of conscious of what you're doing and your craft.
Exactly.
as a writer. Do you find that, does it depend on who you get stuff from as to whether editing someone else's copy is faster or slower than writing your own? Does it save you much time?
Yeah. I mean, of course, like I think the amount of content that we have to push out, again, supporting so many different campaigns and so many different initiatives, it's so much faster for me to edit. And for the most part, I would say it takes about the same amount of time, regardless of who I get it from within the company, whoever I get the copy from. It just sometimes they'll make an agreement with me that, hey, they'll just give me a draft and they'll just put in the key messages, right? And there won't be a lot of storytelling to it. So then I got to come in and kind of make the product come alive, or make the campaign come alive in that way, and find, you know, the emotion and all of that. And then sometimes they have a complete, like, what often happens is a region will do a case study in their native language. Like right now I'm working on a project where I got a case study in from China, and it has global appeal, but they did it in Chinese. And so then basically what I do is I run it through Google Translate, and then I take that the really rough English version that I get back from Google Translate, and I sit and then I mold it and shape it into the kind of case study that I would want on the global level.
Wow, that doesn't sound easy. It sounds like you have your hands
took me a little while. Yeah. So, but one other quick tip, cool. Since we're on that topic, is it's really interesting because I create the global English standard copy that we then also distribute back to the regions sometimes. And the most common objection I'll get is if I use, you know, kind of a really creative idiom or turn of a phrase or something like that, it doesn't localize very well, right? So it's hard to take what is really kind of funny and humorous and interesting in English and say put it into German or put it into Chinese or put it into Japanese or something like that. Not all those fun expressions carry over. And so a lot of the dialogue that we have back and forth is, okay, how do we land on something in English that can be applicable across so many different languages?
Sure. And, you know, because otherwise you're putting a lot of pressure on your translators to come up with something. Absolutely. That's, you know, that is equivalent. And you've got machine translating's got no chance, I guess. But, I mean, are there kind of other kind of cultural challenges where you have colleagues, you know, in marketing, you know, all around the world? Are there, you know, are there kind of cultural things?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll say in the best way. I mean, it's awesome. It stretches you, so it's challenging in a way, right? You're having your preconceived notions and your routines and the way you do things challenged, but to a greater degree. And so, I mean, the positive side is definitely that you get to meet so many great people with so many fresh ideas and new ways of looking at things and all of that. So, I mean, I meet, because it's such a big company, I get to meet new people, I'll say, almost every week, usually over Skype. I work in Copenhagen. We have a small office here. So I'm mostly interacting with people over Skype, over email. We use Slack a lot, too. And so, but it's just really fun to get their new perspectives. But you also have to be very, very flexible and very just patient, because the perspectives and the way that people, the thought processes and the way that people work, compared to how I'm used to doing things, it's a little less like comparing apples and oranges and a little more like comparing apples like with something like bicycles, right? It's just completely different. Like, I have a coworker on my team named Roy, and he is a former guy that worked at Lego, and he's originally Dutch and moved to Denmark to get married and has been living in the country for like 19 years. So he speaks Dutch, Danish, and English all fluently, and he's just got a really creative mind. But the way that he approaches a piece of content or a project and the way that I do is just completely different. And so a lot of times that's complementary, right? We come away having created something even better because of the different perspectives that we bring to the table. But, you know, we've also had to learn each other and know, okay, that when we're coming and sitting down at the table and being creative on a concept or whatever, this is how both of us operate. And just, you know, not the conflict emerges, but just being aware of, okay, this is how Roy approaches things, and then this is how I approach things.
And sound of it, that's the sort of thing that kind of thing takes a while to bed in and hit your stride. I guess that's something where, you know, that's a privilege. I guess kind of if you're working in that way with a client, say, if you had a kind of a client relationship where you had those, you know, polar opposite kind of ways of doing something, you might not even get to the point where you hit that kind of collaboration unless you have a very strong relationship, I guess.
It takes a lot of trust, right? And like you said, that's something that's built over time. So, I mean, our team here has been together now for 2 years, and I feel like we're a really well-oiled machine where we understand each other and we, you know, kind of have that that sixth sense just about things. We're able to anticipate what each other is doing. So that's really cool to experience, right? But then we're also working with a lot of people within the company, because our team supports all the different regions. Our team works with all the different project managers. We we kind of function a little bit like an in-house agency. We wouldn't call ourselves that, but that's a little bit how it functions. We have our own projects and campaigns and other things that we're responsible for too. But so we, our team is very tight knit, and then we're also working hard to build relationships and build trust with the regional marketing managers and the segment marketing managers who are our product owners and that kind of stuff. So it's very cool. It's a really exciting work environment to be in because you're experiencing new stuff all the time.
Sure. Sounds amazing. And I think there's something about that 2 year mark where you just, everything starts to bed in. Certainly when we take on a brand new writer here and we start to train them, I think somewhere around that 2 years, stuff really sort of, I think, starts to click. One of the things that I'm really interested in is Danfoss has so many, you know, technical niche products. I mean, especially in, you know, somewhere like cooling, where, you know, you have all this, you know, you have all these dozens of refrigerants and refrigerant change going on, and you know, all these different international protocols. And then on top of that, you've got all of the different regulatory frameworks in all of the countries and the continents. How much of that stuff do you need to know to write authoritative, interesting content? How much of an expert do you need to be?
Well, so my colleagues joke that they think that I know everything here. Like, I had a colleague comment that, like, man, Lasse, you're really good with all the technical information that we have going here. You seem like you're writing all this stuff. You seem like you know a lot. And basically, I come back to them and I said, I'm really good at pretending. Because, I mean, like you said, there's just so much to know. And so one thing that is very important for me is that when I sit down to write something, whether I'm editing it or whether I'm writing it from scratch, one of the first things that I do is I get on the phone with either the responsible marketing person, or they'll connect me with the product expert, like the engineer. And I'll just have like a quick briefing conversation where I'm like, all right, explain it to me. How does this thing work? What's the key benefits for the customer? You know, why is it exciting and new? You know, all that stuff. And try to just have a 15-minute conversation. And then they send me a bunch of material, product sheets or brochures that they've done in the past that you know, where the material is still relevant and that kind of stuff. And then I'm able to kind of read through, pull out the interesting bits, and then take that content and create whatever new thing I'm working on. And then once that content is in draft stage, then I go back again and I verify with them, here's what I've said about this product. And do I get it right? Did I use the right terms? Am I overselling the benefit? All those different things. I double check that it's consistent. And I also, you know, we have personas too. So I'm matching it up with the different personas that we have and what are their wants, needs, desires, all that kind of stuff. So now that I'm saying it out loud, there's a lot of thought and effort that goes into even, for example, like an email or an article, or even a short series of social posts. And so I joke with my social media manager because, you know, he has a multiple channels that he has to keep populated with content, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. And so he asks me for a lot of social posts, and I tell him it's way easier for me to revise and polish and, you know, make, you know, put a fun twist on a social post that you've already created versus having to write one from scratch. Because if I write from scratch, I have to dive into all the material and find the interesting bits and find the story and then sit and think of how to creatively communicate it to people on a particular social channel. So I would just say I'm not a very technical person in general. I'm always on the front lines of marketing. I'm always chasing the high level benefits, the more emotional stuff, right? But we, you know, even here at Danfoss, we say we're not a business to business company. We're human to human. So we want that reflected in our content, but we also have to make sure that the technical information is absolutely correct.
Oh, yes, of course. And I think that a lot of people, you know, writers worry about taking the time of the subject matter expert and the product guy and that kind of thing, right? But in my experience, you know, knowing little, I know some, but knowing less, it is kind of a superpower. You know, it gives you the license to ask those questions. And a lot of the time, most of the product engineers I talk to are only too happy. Like, they love to explain why they've done what they've done and why it's good, right? Do you find that?
Well, Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is no one more passionate about these products, right, than the people that are creating or innovating on them, right? So they spend years sometimes figuring out a problem or upgrading one of our products. And so when we sit down and say, hey, you know, tell me what you've been doing for the last 6 months, they're all too happy to talk about it. They're excited.
You mentioned that you have, I mean, so much content going out all around the world, all the time. So do you get to kind of compare stuff? Do you have a clear idea of what makes a piece of content work for Danfoss and what makes something less successful?
Yeah. I mean, we are getting really, really good now about measuring, you know, and following the customer journey and seeing, you know, which content works at which stage and all of that. And so, you know, we have people on our team that are responsible for the measuring, and our social media manager is also really good about tracking what content is performing well in our social channels. And so, like, I'll give you an example. You know, I get really excited about creating, you know, kind of the more surface level stuff, you know, hey, come read this case study about and see how big of a difference we made, or I'll, you know, writing a thought leadership article or whatnot. But our audience on social in particular, I think it was on LinkedIn, I hope I'm saying this right. we have these animated graphs that show how like an air conditioning system will work, and just, you know, it has animated flow through the pipes and blah, blah, blah. We got so much organic traffic on this one single post, like hundreds and hundreds of likes on our LinkedIn page as a result of it. And if my gut instinct would not have been, oh, that's the one that's gonna take off organically. I would have thought like a case study or something else would have. But the data shows our customers are really interested in getting into like the nitty gritty detail of what's going on with some of our products and stuff like that. And so they do like the other stuff too at certain points. But that's just one example of that. We, you know, it's one thing to rely on gut instinct, and the longer you're in a company, the better that will be, right? But also making sure to measure and track and pull lessons away, right? We do a lot of trial and error in our team, testing different things. You know, Cinemagraphs we've tried out, and you know, we're doing a lot with native social video now, not just copying over the YouTube link. You know, we're constantly testing different content types, different content formats, and then also what that content looks like, and then pulling those lessons away and applying them to future effort.
Wow, that's amazing. And it's great to have that data. And one of the things that I would say to you and equally to any of our clients listening, or to anybody that works with a copywriter as well as the writer, you know, is that always share that content back with the writer. I think sometimes the marketer looks at it and then the writer never gets it again. And one of the things that we always bang is, please let us know what's working for you, because then we get better.
So just real quick on that.
Yeah, right? Sure.
We have evolved that way, right? Because earlier on, I mean, that was the drum that I was banging, is I would, you know, create a piece of copy or multiple pieces of copy, and I felt like I was sending it out into the ether, right? I mean, it gets taken and used in so many different channels, but I would rarely hear back, right? What works, what lands? And as a writer, yeah, you're just taking a stab based on some good data and some gut instinct. And so now I feel like this is great. We're getting the feedback, and we can angle our future content to hit what's working. So that's super critical, as a writer.
Great stuff. Thank you. We are just about out of time already. That's really flown. But, but before I let you go, Lasse, there's one more question that I'm really keen to hear from as many writers and as many marketers about as possible this year, which is when you think about the work that you've done that you love, the stuff that really makes you proud, what does that have in common, and what stops you doing more of it?
Well, I would say the thing that makes me proud, or the thing that like causes best work, right, is when... For me, it's when our whole team comes together, right? So we'll get a project and we sit down at the table and we brainstorm around it, and we hone in on a really powerful message, and then everybody like just gets that fire in their belly, right? They like, you can tell that everybody's bought in. And so, and I think the audience can really tell when they can see that passion come through. And so earlier this year, we launched a podcast actually, where we have a guy named Jens, and he's been working at Danfoss for about 40 years. So he has a ton of information about refrigeration principles and products and everything in his head. And so we got him to sit down and do a podcast, and we've been publishing it on SoundCloud, and we used social media to find an audience. And so we have all these funny posts about, you know, finding your refrigeration zen by chilling out and hanging out with Jens on this podcast. And it really resonated with our audience. And so I think part of that is because everybody that was part of that project team got super excited about this podcast, got really, you know, into all the different content that we were creating. And I think that that passion seeped out, and the audience caught on to that. And now we have a dedicated audience of listeners, and we're publishing more and more episodes all the time. And so I think that's what makes a great project, is just the passion that comes from getting everybody on the same page and getting everybody pulling in the same direction. And as far as, you know, anything stopping you doing it, I think it's just, you know, find the interesting thing in each project, right? Because, I mean, some projects are inherently more interesting and exciting than others, depending on your personality type. And so, but just getting on board and being willing to support, and then prioritizing, right? Because like we've talked about already, there's so much content here, not everything can get equal attention. So find the projects that you gravitate towards and invest in those, I would say.
That's brilliant. Thank you. And if you can give us a link to Jens's SoundCloud, we'll certainly put a link to that in the show notes. I think we're all keen to find our refrigeration zen. although I'm not sure about this podcasting idea. It'll never catch on.
There's nothing to be made of podcasting. That was literally, I went to South by Southwest, I think it was in like 2007, and there was a panel on podcasting, and the podcasters on that panel were saying, yeah, there's no money to be made in podcasting. I don't think this is going to last.
Yeah, no, definitely not. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time and your wisdom.
Thanks for having me on, David. It's super fun to talk to you.
No, you too. You take care and have a good day.
Yeah, thanks, David.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Lasse for that chat. It was really fun to do. And I don't know about you, but I'm definitely going to listen to Chilling with Jens right away.
It sounds absolutely brilliant. And I have to say, when I saw your kind of notes for this episode before I'd listened to the interview there with Lasse, I saw that you were going to listen to Chilling with Jens.
Yeah.
I thought this must be some Jens Lekman album that Lasse must have recommended to you. And I'm absolutely delighted to find that it sounds like a really cool podcast that Danfoss are doing.
About refrigeration engineering.
Exactly.
It's very similar.
Jens Lekman should do an album about refrigeration engineering.
Concept album.
So you covered a lot of ground on that interview.
Just a bit, yeah.
But one of the things that stuck out for me, because we're talking about writing for engineers, was what Lasse was saying about how I think often we as marketers or copywriters think that engineers or the technical subject matter experts are going to be quite taciturn and maybe don't want to talk to fluffy marketing people. Mm. But actually, when you get them in a room, they're really, really happy to talk in depth about, you know, their products and, you know, the processes that went into developing them and all of that. So
absolutely. It's like, yeah, somebody else cares.
Yes. And so I was thinking, I mean, David, this is something that, this kind of writing is something you do more, I think, than I do. Mm-hmm. You've written for kind of heating and air conditioning and refrigeration engineers as well as other types of engineer
yes.
as well.
Oh, so. I'm no stranger to forklift truck batteries.
That's right, yes, yeah, motors, yes.
Yes.
So do you approach it differently when you're writing for an engineering audience? You know, are there things that you bear in mind that you wouldn't maybe use for a business decision maker audience?
Sure, I think that it's, these days, it's a lot of the same things, but kind of more so. It's like all of the things that you think of in good B2B copy, but turned up to 10. So it really, really needs to not sound like marketing. It really, really, like, it can't be too shiny. It can't be too much like they're talking, like it's a marketer talking to them. It needs to be like it's another expert who's talking to them. And I think that's probably the case for decision makers as well, but more so with engineers. And similarly along that line, that they've got to have the value of the content has to be really, really clear. It's got to be telling them something that they don't know, or they'll just dismiss it as fluff straight away. So again, you know, creating content that has intrinsic value is important, but for this audience, it's really, really important.
Yeah. So how are you kind of able to get on that level? How do you know that what you're writing is kind of pitched at the right level for the engineer that you're writing for?
Yeah, that's a really hard question. And I think a lot of the time, as far as possible, it's talking to those people. Thankfully, a lot of the subject matter experts that I talk to, and people like that, often I'll spend a lot of my time talking to kind of sales engineers and things. So I'm talking to them about who their customers are and what their customers want, but also, you know, they all speak the same language. And so I'll be able to pick that up. And then it's a lot of sort of reading trade mags and that kind of thing, just to see how that kind of jargon gets handled in the real world and what people are talking about and what they're not.
Absolutely. That's something that I find really useful as well when I'm writing for quite a technical audience, is to read some of those trade publications that they read. So you get the kind of, you get the language, but you get the kind of cadence of it and, you know, how information should be presented, you know, the way that information should be presented to them. So that's a really useful tip. Do you have any others?
I mean, I think that the thing that is probably slightly different, similar but different to writing for other B2B audiences, is that for an engineer, you're writing for two audiences probably, because you're writing for the person that has to understand the technical reasons to do something, but then they will often have to go and make a business case to a budget holder. And so you're not convincing them of the business case so much. You convince them of the technical case. But if you can help them to make a business case as well, you know, in the way that you arrange the features and the benefits, then that will make it easier for them to make that recommendation within a decision-making unit.
I think that is really important, because they are often not the budget holder, are they? They're an influencer, but they can't make the decision on their own.
No, but they're often, you know, a really, really key influencer, and the ones who will do the comparisons, make the recommendations. But when someone goes, look, this one, you know, particularly for, we often find ourselves working for people that are not the cheapest solution. They're the best solution, but not the cheapest. Yeah. And helping them to explain exactly why you do that, that's great. Or, you know, as we discussed before with sort of Maxon Motor and people and with their catalog, if you can just give them so much stuff that you get designed in as part of the design process. Something else that I'd probably say, just to remind people that maybe don't write in this area so much, and particularly who have to handle stakeholders in this area, is that there are, because they say, well, our audience is very knowledgeable about the subject, we can't dumb down, and that there are ways of making your subject easy to read without dumbing it down, without losing that technical authority. And you just have to kind of unpick those three kinds of complexity that are going on. Often they all get bundled up because people go, well, it's a more educated audience, it's a less educated audience. But the actual useful technical specifics are one kind of complexity. The kind of sentence structure that stuff sits in is a second kind. So you can have very, very technical terms still sitting in quite simple structured copy. And then similarly, you don't have to use, away from those technical specifics, you don't have to let that drag your language into a sense that your vocabulary into an area that's really formal. So just because you're talking about scintillation around the equator in a GNSS RF environment.
Oh, impressive.
I had to pull that one out of my brain. I haven't written for that client for a while. But just because you're writing about that, it's still, you can still say use instead of utilize, right? You can,
absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
You can still, the other bits of the language, you can still pull out of those most common 10,000 words that people use that mean that even someone that's quite technical can absorb the information that they need quite quickly.
Yeah.
So I think those are probably the three things that you know, I would say is, you know, make sure it doesn't sound like marketing, that it has value, help them to build a business case, and keep technical specifics in, but get aside from that, get complexity out.
Yeah, and I think that's really good advice. And I think the only thing that I would kind of build on that, mm-hmm. perhaps, is, you know, when you're talking about leaving the technical specifics in, I think sometimes we as copywriters and sort of marketing people can be quite free and easy about some terms and
sure.
some words in the language which actually have very precise, specific meanings for that particular technical audience. So, you know, with our GNSS client that we've been talking about, you know, the word precise has a very precise meaning, and the word accurate has a very precise meaning as well. And you sort of can't throw these words around like you could in sort of more conversational style, kind of business level communications.
So for the
don't ask me. Don't ask me.
Oh, go on. The listener wants to know.
So if something's accurate, I'm going to try and explain this.
Okay,
now.
Great.
So if something's accurate, like an accurate measurement is... it is very close or equal to the known value
uh-huh.
of a thing. And if something's precise, it means you can just measure it many, many times over and get the same result. That
right.
doesn't mean it's accurate. It just means you get the same result every time. So you get a precise result. It may not necessarily be an accurate result. So there's quite a big difference.
Wow. Every day is a school day. That, isn't that the best thing about B2B copy?
It absolutely is. Yes, you learn something every day. If not more than one thing.
Well, once again, we've been beaten by the clock. We're out of time, unbelievably. But if you have any tips on working with international colleagues or writing for engineers, or if you want to carry on the conversation about gender in B2B tech copywriting, please, please do email us at podcast@radix-communications.com, or send us over a voice memo, or get in touch on the social media. We're around on LinkedIn, and you'll find us on Twitter at RadixCom. Our next episode is about copywriting for social media in B2B. So if you have any questions you'd like answered by the visiting expert, then send them over. Until then, remember, the more technical the subject, the simpler your explanation. Bye.
Goodbye.